It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that should be exactly 1 week now.
Good.
All right.
That's really good timing.
Yeah, that worked out well.
Excellent.
Hello. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world that's sick of your face. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 225, which is probably why y'all are sick of our face.
There you go.
Sick of our faces.
Sick of your face. One time we went out to eat at the truly authentic Mexican hacienda restaurant, Carlos O'Kelly's, and with the neighbors, including the, at the time, I'm going to say 4-year-old and 7-year-old. I don't think he had turned 5 yet. And I drew a face on my hand, like Señor Wences kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I said, my name is Luis. And it's this lady named Luis. And then I drew Luis on the other hand. And so they found that fun. But at a certain point, Luis started telling them a story about how one day I was outside and I was talking to a squirrel. And you know what the squirrel did? No, he did. He poked me in the face. And then I said, that is very rude. Why would you do that? And you know what he said? Nothing. He just poked me in the face. And the 4-year-old lost his shit. Like, fell off the chair, peed himself, his head exploded. I don't even know. And he just loved it. And he would constantly be like, tell us again. And I was like, what, about the squirrel? You know what he did to me? And they wave for it. And I'd say, he poked me in the face. And he would collapse in laughter. Oh, he thought that was so awesome. Little kids are the best audience for boring, repetitive jokes.
I guess so.
Loved it to death. Anyway, if you're joining us for the first time, it's weird. Here's the deal. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, good people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little things, notes, comments, topics, questions, that sort of thing. And the hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those little emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Effervescent servants. Reach into the hat, draw those cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, and that's the whole show. And normally we do this on Thursday, but this week instead we're doing it on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a Thursday earlier, so you guys are in the future.
Tony said earlier that good people write in. If you don't think you're a good person, well, write the hat.
Yeah, this will make you
good. And you will become
a good person. It's basically like plenary indulgence.
Except better, because you actually become good.
Yes, and it doesn't cost.
No, because the thing is, what the indulgence is, you don't actually become good, because then you have to pay one later, right? It kind of runs out, whatever. This way, you write in once, you're good. We'd like you to keep writing in anyway, but
I feel like
you only have to do it once.
Don't understand how plenary indulgences work. Or how podcasts work. yeah. But, yeah, no, go with that. Write in absolution, I guess.
You don't think people had to keep paying over and over again?
Well, yeah, because they kept sinning. It's not like if you commit a sin, you're forgiven for a week of it. Like, if you somehow didn't sin after that, then you have to pay.
I don't think it mattered whether or not they felt like they had a confessable sin. I don't think it mattered. I suppose I see your point, though.
Well, I'm pretty sure the plenary indulgences were for specific sins. It wasn't just, here's $5, I'm cleansed. No, it would have to be, you know what? I killed that dude. Here's $5. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, okay. I don't know. Like,
my understanding was it wasn't always that specific, or even often that specific. It was more of a, hey, do I get can I reduce my sentence in purgatory if I give you some money?
When I spoke and then you keep to giving my more friend, money. Martin, that's how he explained it to me.
Maybe I do have an incomplete understanding.
Sorry, that's a name drop. Yes, I spoke about plenary indulgences with Martin Lawrence, the comedian. And he knows a lot about them. Catholic theology is a hobby of his.
It's funny when you're talking about this, because I've been thinking about how... Oh, your phone's going to ring.
Hello? That was no fun.
I was thinking about how the concept of Satan.
Yes. Wait. Like the devil or like Satan, the fabric?
No, like the devil.
Oh, okay.
And how... Actually, this is something that I've sort of noticed or thought about or realized for a long time. How that particular notion of... this incarnation of evil that's everywhere, including like sort of owns you from the time you're born, so that if you're not immediately baptized, you're going to go to hell even though you haven't ever done anything yet. That this is fairly a unique conception in human history. You know, you've got boogeymen, you've got demons, you've got that stuff, but the notion of constantly being surrounded at all moments by evil, it being in you, you're born with it, and you have to follow these rules that come from these particular people, and that doesn't even absolve you. You have to keep doing it over and over again. But what your whole life is lived in this dark place that's through and through evil, and yet you supposedly worship a creator God in Jesus, but you're fixated on this bad guy and avoiding this bad guy. And not only that, but this bad guy's and everybody else, you can't really trust them either. The only people you can really trust are the people who are giving you these rules and telling you how bad you are and how bad the world is. That's a level of boogeyman that I don't think probably really existed before Christians came up with it.
You might be convincing me to join Catholicism. Well, I feel like is also it's the only faith I know of that came up with original sin.
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Is that and that's part and
which
parcel of it.
Which has always been an awkward concept for me.
Yeah, that's part and parcel of it. And not only that, but this concept seems to be deep in Western culture, so that even if you're not a particularly devout Christian, or even if you're not Christian at all, but you are a Westerner, you almost have to have something or person or group or idea or something represent the ultimate evil that challenges the thing that you cherish most. So it seems like something that I don't even want to say early Christians came up with it. The early church came up with it. You can kind of draw a distinction there.
Yeah.
But it's something that's become a part of the culture so much that it doesn't really have anything to do with religion anymore. It's kind of something that undergirds our whole us versus them mentality in the West that we carry with us everywhere. Like, there's always got to be a them.
You
that
said
we're
undergirds.
But you know what I'm saying?
I do.
And I've recently been trying to sort of figure out, when did this kind of happen? And I don't think anybody really knows.
Well, people always talk about Western civilization being the civilization about duality.
Right,
as
but,
opposed to
but,
others. And
you know,
that's sort of what we've got here.
Sure,
black,
sure.
Black, white, good, evil,
yeah,
us,
but,
them.
But before that, though, you had the Zoroastrians, and they are a very dualistic culture, too. It's there's something, it's like some next-level stuff going on when the Christians start doing it. And it somewhere between when Constantine became a Christian and when you get the first Inquisition, and there's like 400 years in there. Somewhere in there, it developed and solidified. But of course, all through that period, you know, the supremacy of the Roman bishop hadn't been established yet. I mean, that took a long time to happen and stuff. But somewhere in there, someone got this idea about Satan and the concept that I've been talking about. And then it sort of got, by the time you get the first Inquisition, and somewhere in the 1100s or whatever, that's when it's clearly solidified in both in the church and maybe even in the popular thinking. And
I never knew a talk about Satan could be this boring.
Well, what the thing about it is, though, it's basically from the perspective of the people in power, it's basically the same kind of strategy as convincing everybody you're God, like the God kings, you know.
Yeah.
One of the ways they solidified power was to convince everybody that they were a god or descended from a god.
Like a Mortan Joe.
This is kind of the same strategy, except instead of saying, I'm God, you're saying, I'm not the devil. See?
Mm.
And that's better.
I frequently have to tell people that.
That's better because you get people to, like, they will come to you for help and they'll look up to you, but you don't have to work as hard. Because you're not trying to convince them you're God. You're just trying to convince them you're not that bad guy over there, this invisible bad guy that's chasing you all over the place.
I'm trying to work this into the sky cake model. Because the sky cake model does not include the devil initially.
Well, you know, the reason I've been thinking about it is because it seems like you said, our culture has dualism in it, which causes all kinds of problems. I think one of the ways that the dualism in Western culture has been able to get so deep and to stay so long is because it's shored up by, or maybe even glued together and held together very firmly by, this particular boogeyman image.
By the devil.
Yeah.
So the devil causes Western duality.
No.
It's the devil's fault.
No, it's paranoia that does it, and a paranoia that's been planted in our culture by this devil image that was concocted back.
Now, tell me if I've talked about this before. When I was in high school, we sang Negro spirituals in choir.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
which are still popular in secular schools.
Yeah. But
somehow they get a pass.
Well, and the reason I'm reminded of this right now is one that we sang was shut de doe, keep out de debil.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not attempting to be amusing here.
No, that's the
we
way.
Did not sing shut the door, keep out the devil. We were very specifically instructed to sing shut de doe, keep out de debil.
Yep, right.
What the fuck? Is what I'm saying. But to be fair, it was only a year later that I saw the whitest, blondest little Aryan freshman singing Bess, You Is My Woman Now on stage. So, were we post-race already?
I don't know.
I mean, we only had like 5 black people in the whole school ever. Not at once. I don't think we ever had them at once, but I just look back at that now. I'm like, really? Really? That's not a shit we did? So how was your week?
My few minutes?
This weekend.
That's kind of why I started talking about this stuff I've been thinking about, because I wanted something to talk about.
This weekend, which is coming up for me, and I think also for you, but it's past for them.
Hmm.
We're taking the niece and nephew again.
It's... Oh, yeah, past for them. Taking... Yeah. Oh, yeah? You're going over there and...
and steal them away for a couple of days.
Yeah, you did that. You've done that once before.
Yes. And that time we took them to Grand Bear Lodge and Resort.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Water park. We're not doing that this time.
What are you doing?
We are taking them to Dubuque.
No kidding.
Because we couldn't get any closer to House on the Rock. Because there's some sort of arts and crafts festival up there this weekend. And so we could not find hotels. So we're going to Dubuque, and then we're driving up to House on the Rock on Saturday.
Boy, I didn't even know the House on the Rock was that close to Dubuque.
It's like an hour, I think they said. I don't know. I know we're remarkably little about the House on the Rock.
Oh, man, I cannot wait to hear what you have to say about it.
I heard it's pretty freaky.
I've never been there, but I've heard enough about it to think that you are either going to be amazed by it, or you're going to
I've heard
hate
a lot.
It.
I think I'm going to be amazed. Okay. We'll see.
It's probably not going to be anything in between.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, for one thing, it's a very long tour. I've heard that.
I have that concern.
And I know that you can get pretty,
and the,
feel
the
pretty
nephew
trapped.
And the nephew has
that
concern as well.
Okay.
Because he doesn't give a damn. But we'll see. I told him, I said, if it sucks, we'll go find something else to do.
But, you know, it's talked about, it's in American Gods, and, you know.
Yes, that was the first reference ever. Yeah. And somehow, in reading American Gods, I thought it was somewhere in the South. I don't know why.
Oh, really?
But, yeah. So, yeah, and then Sunday, we'll just sort of dig. I mean, there's stuff in, there's lots of stuff in Dubuque, too.
Oh, yeah.
And we're in a hotel with a pool, and for the kids, that covers a lot right there.
Sure.
So, yeah, so that's going on this weekend. And then next weekend, we get Friday off, and so we're going to have a three-day weekend up in Chillicothe, or I guess down in Chillicothe. So, won't be home for the weekend for a while.
I wonder if we'll go to Dubuque this weekend.
Don't, if you see us, pretend like you don't know.
No,
us.
I mean, we don't have anything else particularly going on, but we probably then just won't do anything because we've got all kinds of stuff going on the following weekends. But we've been meaning to get out to Dubuque because, you know, I'm working on that story that takes place out there.
Dubuque.
So I've got some research to do.
Dubuque. All right, so hat?
Yep.
Meh.
Me first. Meh. I go first. Let me drop them.
They took
first.
Our jobs. Took it. I haven't done that in a while.
Anonymous.
All right.
I didn't bring my reading glasses, so now I have to hold this clear.
What the hell's on your face, then?
Not my reading glasses.
Wow, you're old. You have more than one pair of glasses. You're
yes,
so old.
Yes, because, you know, the whole bifocal thing would just make me sick because I can't.
You are old.
I have stupid eyes. Anyway.
Stupid eyes. My eyes are just like all the time.
Hat Mavens.
Eyes are so stupid. That might be the name of this episode, is Stupid Eyes.
Good.
With these stupid eyes. One look at you and I can't disguise. I've got stupid eyes.
Are you done?
I feel the magic between you and I.
No, you feel the stupid between you.
Feel the stupid.
Yeah. That's. If you could decide who should run for president, who would you place on each party's tickets? Who should run for president?
Well, as I've mentioned before, I'm really hoping Donald Trump runs on the Republican one because that's hilarious.
Who do you want as his vice president?
Somebody from the Jersey Shore. I don't really care who. Any of them would be fine.
That's good.
Z-Balls, or there's one named Z-Balls, right? He can be on the ticket. Don't tell me there's not a member of the Jersey Shore cast named Z-Balls. If there's not, there really should be.
Or they will be now, probably. Yeah. If you could decide,
what,
you should.
Is that what they named the baby? I feel like this is a pointless question for me and a really difficult question for you.
Pointless for you?
Yeah, because I don't know. I don't like anybody in the world, so I mean.
Well, they might be looking for some humorous answers, like
Z-Balls.
Yeah, that's a pretty. That was a very humorous answer. Do I have a humorous answer? I don't know.
I find that unlikely.
Yeah, I do too.
He would hate it, but I honestly think Jon Stewart would make a good president.
Really?
I know they made a whole movie starring Robin Williams to point out how dumb that idea is. And I get it. And I'm not saying he's my first choice, but I feel like he'd be good.
Really? Why would he make a good president?
Well, actually, this is interesting because something came up just today. I was watching Daily Show that had Anthony Napolitano on it, and he was trying to convince him to run for Senate. And they were talking about Al Franken, and he's like, so you're just trying to replace everyone with comedians. And I thought about it, and I thought, there's something to that, because I feel like comedians, especially clever ones, are used to sort of looking at all sides of things.
Agreed.
And I feel that would serve you well in the presidency. I don't know, though, because my definition of an ideal leader might not work as the president of the United States. Because if I list the qualities that would make you the best leader in my eyes, I'm not sure that's the same list of things that would make you the best president of the United States, because there's a lot of shit and baggage attached to being the president of the United States. The fact that this drives me crazy every year, and I learned it before I was old enough to vote. Every year, the presidential candidates make all these promises, and people talk about, oh, and they never keep their campaign promises. In most cases, they are promising something they literally would have no power as president to do.
Right.
Like, and especially the crazy ones that, like, nobody, like, we're going to abolish income tax. I'm like, you could not do that. I promise you. I'm not saying the law doesn't allow for it to happen somewhere. I guarantee you, if you somehow got president in those 4 years, you would not be able to pull it off. If that's what you dedicated all your time to, you still couldn't do
it. Well, and even if it happened, they wouldn't have done it.
No.
Congress would have had to do it somehow.
And I feel like there's a lot of shit tied up in that. So assuming, and this is going to head off a lot of your answers, assuming we can't just abolish the federal government and, you know, mix it up. Assuming they still have to just be president of the United States. There's a lot of extenuating circumstances that I think make it more complicated than just who would make the best leader.
Right. I mean, when I think of, if I was going to give a serious answer, the things that inform my answer would have to do with a lot of other things besides whether or not this person can actually do a good job at a job that I know so little about, I'm barely qualified to even know if a person can do it.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, what I know about the presidency is basically, you know, what their powers are according to the Constitution.
Flight.
Yeah.
Invulnerability.
What kinds of things I'm okay with a president doing. But in terms of what a president actually has to deal with in their day-to-day life, if you think of voting for a president as being very similar to hiring someone for a particular job,
yeah,
who is qualified to know if a given candidate has any qualifications whatsoever? I mean, you vote for president, you know, presumably most people vote for president because, and the reason presidents make those outlandish promises that don't have anything to do with being president is because most people are voting for the person they think is going to represent their interests,
yeah,
which isn't even what the president's supposed to be. No. But presumably that's what you're doing. But what's that got to do with whether or not this person can even do a very good job?
Yeah.
So when I think of who I would want to be president, it often has nothing to do with the job they do. It has more to do with, it would be nice in my lifetime to see a woman become president, for example.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there are women who get the nomination, I almost don't even care what party. And I know a lot of people think that's bad, but it's, to me, both parties are the same anyway.
Because it becomes such a fundamental social change.
Yeah,
it's like, this isn't about what happens in the following 4 years.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is about the fact that we finally have done
this. And to me, the same thing's going to happen regardless. So it would be cool if little girls could finally look to the White yeah. House and see a woman is in that office.
Instead of all those little girls who have to play with the Angela Merkel action figures. And if you take the George W. Bush one and put it behind it, she'll cringe when he puts his hands on her shoulders. No, and actually, I feel... Oh, fuck you, Anonymous, for making us get this political. I feel like Obama has taught me a lot.
About?
About what it means... About the whole good leader versus good president thing. Yeah, because I still believe Obama is smart... I believe Obama has a lot of shared interests with me. I believe Obama would like things. I believe if Obama had magic powers, he would have made the perfect president, like, to totally just, like, fix a lot of things. I don't believe... First of all, I think he's proven he's not capable of getting it done. He had a lot of stuff that I genuinely believe he wanted to do that he mm-hmm. was not able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But also... maybe was open-minded and sort of balanced in his viewpoint to a degree that made action difficult, which is something I respect in a person. You know, don't think, look before you leap and that kind of thing. But I think to the degree that he may have sort of ameliorated his own momentum in some cases, and consequently... Some stuff has happened. I'm not sad he was president, but I'm incredibly disappointed from what I was hoping would occur.
Right, right. Well...
And I don't think that's because he's not the awesome person I thought he was.
No, yeah, yeah.
I'm just not sure that awesome person makes an effective president of the United States.
I think what... One thing you might... We might be able to glean from what's happened with Barack Obama and his presidencies is that it's probably true that... No matter how much of a Washington insider you are, and he wasn't, of course, but you know, he was a senator, and he senator, right? Not a
yeah, yeah.
Okay, and so he, while he was running, he certainly could have talked to the other people who had inside information, and probably did. So you can imagine someone who's, you know, been in the Senate Arms Committee and all this other stuff, who's got a lot of inside information, when they become president, realize they didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Like, the president is aware of things that a lot of other people in government don't have a clue about, and which makes it virtually impossible for the person running for president, if they've never been president before, to really know.
There's what? Extenuating circumstances. Yeah. What are they? We can't tell you unless you get the job.
Yeah, yeah. So you don't even really know what to put on your resume. And so Barack Obama outlined all the stuff he wanted to see happen. And I'm with you. I think he was sincere in wanting all those things to happen. And a lot of people thought he was naive. I don't think he was probably naive. I think he just took a different strategy. He took a strategy of, well... I don't know what I can promise, so instead of hedging my bets, I'll just put it all out there and really try to do that. And then, of course, you know, probably within the first 100 days, he realized, along with a lot of other people before he even got the office, I'm not even going to be able to do a tiny portion of
this
stuff.
The big first one was Gitmo.
Yeah.
That was, we were all ready, we were all set, and we still don't know what happened.
No.
But there was something where it's like, I can't do that.
And that's the strangest one, because... Like most presidential candidates, a lot of the things he talked about weren't even within the president's power to do. But you did kind of think that as the leader of the party, he might be able to rally Congress.
You have influence.
But Gitmo was something that, like, he could do as the commander-in-chief. So that seemed like a no-brainer. That seemed like the one thing out of all the stuff, if he didn't get it done, he'd get that done. And so, like you just said...
We apologize for the background noise. Apparently our house is on fire.
Like you just said... That's the most mystifying thing, but you know there's a reason, because he probably really meant it when he said that he wanted to close it. So if it's not closed, I'm not saying people shouldn't
Aliens are there.
I'm not saying people shouldn't be disappointed or even outraged if they want to be, but I think there's a reason. I don't think he just got in there and said, okay, I don't care about Gitmo anymore.
And honestly, I mean, and again, he's done good. I still like Obamacare. I'm not saying it's the best system out there. I'm saying it's better than what there was. I like Obamacare better than without Obamacare. He repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Did some good. I'm not saying I'm unhappy with him. I'm disappointed. But all the stuff we talk about, honestly, it's points in Clinton's favor again. Because if anybody can know what's going on with the presidency before they're president, it's going to be her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like a lot of the stuff that she believes in. Some of the stuff I don't. And some of the shit she's done, I'm not crazy about. But a lot of that ties in the fact that I'm confident she can get done what she wants to get done if she becomes president.
Well, of course, there's very little you can criticize her about that you can't. Everybody else that's running is the same boat.
Exactly, so. Exactly. She's evil in the way they all are. Yeah. And just evil enough that I feel like she can get her shit done.
I wonder about
though. And the overarching one is, God damn it, I would love to see a woman president.
Right. As far as...
I do have exceptions to that. I would rather 100 years of more male presidents than see Sarah Palin get anywhere near that office.
The thing about Clinton is, I do think, like you, I think she's got what it takes to get things done, but that doesn't mean they're going to let her get things done.
No.
And
that
is
the problem, is there's a lot of hate baggage.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes me nervous. Well, but honestly, here's how I see that resolving. If it's so huge that it would really fuck up her presidency, it's huge enough she won't get elected.
I agree.
So I'm like, if she gets elected, to me, that's like, it'll probably work.
Would you, this person isn't running, but would you be okay with Condoleezza Rice?
That is a very tricky one.
Yeah.
The only time I ever considered it was when I was making the list of people that I would vote for George W. Bush instead of them, and she was not on the list. Because at the time, I said it basically would be voting for George W. Bush, except we'd now have a black female president. And so that would be worth it.
Well, but here's the thing, though. She is so smart.
I feel like she has grown and learned.
I don't think it would be like voting for George W.
Bush. No, I don't. I no longer do. I still think it might have been at the time.
Maybe. I'm not sure about that either, but...
I feel like she has now.
Do I agree with her on everything? Absolutely not. No more or less so than Hillary Clinton. So it's kind of a wash for me. But I don't think she's planning to run or anything. But she's always been a candidate that I thought would be a very interesting.
And there's one if Elizabeth Warren had gone for it, that would be a major consideration.
A lot of people would be enthusiastic about that.
She claims she's not, but
I've been saying that I think that Hispanic candidates are really going to have a good showing this time around. But I don't mm-hmm. I mean, Rubio, let's see, on the Republican side, I felt pretty confident that Castro, gosh, what's his first name? He's been in the news a lot, too, that he would maybe run. Maybe he still will. I don't know. But Jindal is thrown his...
Jindal's in there, yeah.
...his hat in. And,
Kumail earlier this week said, we'd like to trade to another race. We'll take anybody. You can have Bobby Jindal.
Now, there's a guy. He's pretty charismatic. I mean...
He was being groomed to be the next Obama when Obama was still just starting. Yeah. I remember, I believe he got to say the opposition for the very first State of the Union.
I seem to recall that. Now, he didn't do a very good job, but at least he wasn't drinking water every 2 seconds like Rubio.
No, his presentation was fine. His message was weak. But, you know, it was, what, 2009? So what else was going to happen?
I don't know.
It was going to have to be a lot of, we're sorry.
Yeah. I don't know what, I don't know how Rubio is going to do. The problem with him is he's said a lot of things in the last, 8 years that are not going to play well in ads and stuff. So I don't know.
I feel like it changes a lot if Christie really enters.
Well,
I'm curious about that. And I'm not saying I feel like he's been a wild card enough that.
And you don't think the scandals have hurt him or anything?
Well, no, that's exactly what makes it complicated. Yeah. If it weren't for those, I'd be like, he's probably just going to be the one. At this point, gun to my head, I think it's going to be Bush versus Clinton, which is fucking weird. But that's my guess right now. Because, I mean, seriously.
Really, you think Jeb's going to go that far?
Who else are you going to put up? Honestly.
You think between Rubio and Jeb Bush, Jeb Bush is going to outshine.
I think it's quite possible because Rubio hasn't been on my radar. So to me,
the reason I keep Jeb's going back to Rubio
I think,
is because
I think Jindal's a lost one.
He's young. People, you know, with the last couple election cycles, everyone's thinking the Hispanic vote is just getting more and more influential. So people are going to like that. Truth told, he's got a great story. And when he tells it, and he tells it well, it really moves people. If he can get out there and run a good campaign with a strong message, and if he can do well in debates, I think he could give anyone a run for their money, especially a candidate who does as well but is older. I mean, I hate to say that but true. I'm going to tell you, a younger candidate is just going to play better so long as he doesn't really mess up.
That is true. You may make an argument there. The rest of the field is ridiculous.
Oh, I think
Christie goes for it. I just keep being shocked because I'm like, Rick Perry, really?
No, yeah. Well, I mean,
Rick Santorum, really?
I know, but
Ted Cruz,
and not just that, but when McCain got the nomination, I mean, there were a lot of people in the Republican running who. You responded to all of them like that, like, really? That person's running? But you didn't. You expected that some of them in there would have gotten the nomination before McCain or before Romney.
Yeah.
You know? Well, so even more shocking than the people who get into the running are the people that actually get nominated who they think could beat Barack Obama.
Well, but I'm like,
I don't understand.
Like Herman Cain shows up and I'm like, really?
Yeah, yeah.
But if Herman Cain showed up again now, I'd be like, which is the thing.
Oh, with the Perry
how is Perry back?
Yeah, yeah.
How is Cruz, Cruz there at all?
Santorum, yeah.
Santorum, how is Santorum still alive? I'm kind of like, I feel like at this point he should hate himself the way the world has beaten up on him.
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's Rubio's nomination to win because out of all the people in the field, again, except for some of the things he said that people can nail him for, and if he doesn't do a very good job running his campaign, but you know if he got the right campaign manager, for example, who could manage him properly, I don't see how anyone so far running could beat him. Maybe Jindal because he can be really good at the mic,
but
and he's a younger guy.
I feel like he missed his. I will grant you, assuming Christie comes in, which is what they're expecting. Christie, Rubio, and Bush are probably the three that it comes down to. If there's a fourth, it's Jindal, in my opinion.
Well, and
but I don't know. It also depends on how hard Jeb pushes for.
Well, another
because Jeb's a little bit late to be getting into.
That's
this
right.
Game.
But another thing that could prevent Rubio or Lindahl from getting it is.
There's nobody named Lindahl.
Well, there's a demographic. The Republican demographic is skewed pretty old. Yeah. So there is a chance that they won't like the young upstart, and they're going to nominate
fairly white
older person. Yeah.
But
you know, it all depends.
Are we just assuming Clinton has it sewn up?
For me personally. I don't see anyone who yet
me neither.
Is a meaningful challenge.
Hell, I'm not seeing anybody I've ever heard of.
Well, and it might
put
be
it that
now.
Way.
Let's remember when
I don't even see Kucinich making an appearance.
That's right. Well, let's remember back when Obama ran. He was sort of going against the party grain when he did that.
Well, bet.
And it might be that this time around. Everyone's saying, all right, let's not do that to Hillary again. Everybody, you know, other people can run. If you want to run, run. But let's, you know, you don't run because you'll probably beat her and we don't want to do that
I
to Hillary
it
again.
Fascinating that
kind of deal.
Biden just was never a question. Hmm. I'm not saying I think that's an inappropriate choice. I don't know that I've had that experience in my lifetime where the two-term incumbent vice president was like not even going to be on the board.
No, that's a good point.
But, I mean, I get it.
Well, that would be weird if it was Bush and Clinton
that's
again.
What we were,
that would
yeah.
be so weird. I didn't even really think about that until you mentioned it a little bit ago.
I'm just terrified of the idea of a three-peat of Bush.
I don't know. See, that's a good question. If it came down to that, who would win? I can't see Bush beating.
I wouldn't think. But again,
well,
she's so polarizing.
And,
I don't think
and she's a woman.
Guess.
See, the here,
That's part of why she's polarizing.
If you were to ask me if the United States is ready to elect a woman for president, I'd say I don't think they are.
I'm afraid you're right.
If it's two women running against each other, obviously a woman's going to be president. But let's say it's not even Hillary. Let's say it's a woman who people like better. Let's say it's the Republican, the woman who was it Hewlett Packard's CEO? What's her name?
Oh.
Anyway, let's say it's her running against a male Democratic candidate.
Yeah.
I think even she's, nobody seems to have any particular problems with her. I mean, she's been criticized for not running her company very well and things like that. But not like Clinton having these really polarizing feelings.
Yeah.
If it was her running against a male Democratic candidate, I don't think there'd be a chance. And I think because she's a woman, because I just don't think the United States is ready for it. I hope I'm wrong about that, but I don't think I am.
You might be right. I don't know. It becomes much more variable, because if there's a woman in one of the major party nominations, so they're going to be one of the two.
Yeah.
A huge upsurge comes out of people who didn't bother to vote
before. Yeah, that's true.
Because it's finally a chance. However,
and up on both sides, though.
Exactly.
You got some people who won't
but
vote.
Then it becomes really variable, because there's plenty of people who have written off the entire system.
Yeah.
And when they hear it's going to be a woman, they're going to be like, oh, crap, this time I got to go for it. Or, oh, crap, this is worse than I could ever have imagined. Yeah. I don't think there's any way to know how big those numbers are on either side. Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're pretty big, but
it's so weird, though. I mean, it's kind of hard for me to wrap my brain around sometimes when I think about.
It annoys the shit out of me at this point. It's on. I mean, my big one nowadays is always gay marriage, but I think my second one is, how the fuck have we never had a female president, and we're almost it. It's like the metric system. It's us and a few other places.
Well, it's, back when the vote, in 1920, when the vote for women was finally achieved, in the women's movement, there was a sort of a split, There were a lot of women who thought, okay, this is it.
Yep.
Now that we have the vote, it won't change everything overnight, but, in no time.
From here it goes, because we can vote in whatever we want.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean. Yeah. How many women are in the Senate and in the House combined? Not a whole very large percentage, considering it should be close to 50%.
I don't know anymore, but I do remember the old Simpsons one with that, where the senator says to Lisa, we've got a lot of women senators now, and she says, only two. I checked.
Well, and the Supreme Court. I mean, come on.
Supreme Court's looking better these days.
Right, but half.
No. Well, we're 1.5 away.
We're
from
getting
being
up.
Half.
We're almost to 100 years that women have had the vote.
Yeah.
And not only do we not, we should have had half by now anyway. But if we didn't have half, it should be closer to half.
Clearly.
And it should never have gone up and then gone down for a while. I mean, it should never have gone backwards. And in the legislature,
it took 50
it has.
Years to get one. So.
Well, now I'm talking about the legislature, yeah. but it's just. Now, some certain states are better.
I think it's been 100 years.
Yeah.
The experiment has gone through and proven that men are the superior sex, clearly.
Now, certain states have done a lot better. That has to be acknowledged
and
recognized.
I was not one of them.
No, I was not, but...
That's one of the few things that we really suck at. There's not a lot of stuff where Iowa ranks near the bottom and shit, but when it comes to women representative in our government, apparently business ownership. We're dead last in the nation for women owning businesses.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's we don't have a lot to be proud of in that area, unfortunately. But, I don't know. It baffles me at this time in history that we're still struggling with so many specific issues, including the lack of parity. Even if we achieved parity in these things, I'm often saying... We could have 50% of the legislature represented by women, and the female candidates would still be, evaluated on their hairdo and their clothes and stuff. In a way that the male candidates aren't, and so we'd still have that to cope with and deal with, which is harder because that's not something that you can you can legislate, you know, that just, people just have to stop being morons about this kind of stuff. But there it is. And I don't know. I can't understand it. I don't, it's so counterintuitive to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I see the historical precedents and all that stuff, and I get all that, but it just seems like there's so much reason and logic that pushes back against that, and it just doesn't seem to change anything.
Well, and you're a sociologist, you should know better than that. Reason and logic yes. don't dictate most of that.
So. No, that's true.
Because where it comes up with any of this, is feminism fights for rights for women to do as they would, same as any man does.
Hmm.
And then the women say, yes, I'm free to do what I want. And some of them want to do the same shit they've been doing.
No, which is fine, but...
But that's the thing. If you really... Well, and this is why so many communist revolutions were so violent, because if you let people free to choose, inertia is going to kick in for a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of them are genuinely going to... And so... And I'm not advocating this.
No, no, I know.
But I'm like, but if you can violently overthrow the government and force in a new system, then over time that can become a cultural change.
No, that's right. That's right. Well, because it goes back to that thing where I don't remember how it goes exactly, but it's that sort of that poem about they came for so and so, but I wasn't so and so, so I didn't care. And so, and then it ends that they came for me. Well, as you're saying, there's a lot of social momentum that makes you not really care about any of those other people until it affects you directly. No. And by then it's usually too late.
And a culture of freedom is always the slowest moving because of this exact thing, because by definition, you don't have cohesion.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the hell is going on down there?
I don't know.
He's not peeing, is he?
I don't think so.
I'm going to kick his ass.
Just sort of hanging out.
Every once in a while when they're like mad at me or something, they decide a new part of the house is a litter box. And then I have to kill them and get cats that look just like them so Trish won't find out. And I'm running out of pet stores.
We've talked about this way too long.
Holy crap. This is the most we've talked about politics ever.
I don't know if it's the most. We've had some...
This is the least interesting we've ever talked about politics.
We don't usually like to talk about politics.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Did Jesus Christ write us?
No, Dave of Id did.
Oh.
And it's abridged, but it says...
I like David, Dave, but he's not our Lord and Savior, so...
If...
No offense.
The U.S. presidency was chosen by a single competition with all the candidates...
Okay.
What kind of competition would that be?
Thunderdome, obviously.
Oh, yeah. It's with all the candidates.
Thunderdome.
Thunderdome's only two men enter, one man leaves.
Well, you'd have to have a bracket system.
Yeah, you'd basically have a Thunderdome tournament.
Okay, fine. They all have to do it at once, you're saying?
Well, no, I don't. I'm saying that it's a single competition.
Oh, Demolition Derby.
That is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Just the other day, I was trying to explain to Trish her power and authority in her job, and I told her that she ran Bartertown. And then I'm like, and you've never seen that damn movie. So you don't even get how cool a reference that is. That is like, if I was stranded on a deserted island with only one reference, I think it would be Who Run Bartertown. I love that line.
Yeah, Grease Pig. I like that one. Gotta chase the pig. Gotta catch that
I've
pig.
I've never actually watched that. Have you seen
it? Oh, yeah, sure I have. I'm from Iowa.
I didn't want to presume, but I did kind of think. This was...
Come on! I have seen Demolition Derby and Grease Pig in my hometown. I could probably name a whole bunch of other ones, too.
The Midsummer Ritual I was talking about a few minutes ago / last week?
Okay, yeah.
And I told you everybody brought food. Well, there were little vegetable samosas.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, I should have started by saying, I met someone at this ritual named Sangini.
Okay.
There were vegetable samosas
mm-hmm.
at this thing. I ate one, and I said, who brought the vegetable samosas? And almost everybody in the room was like, seriously? I was like, I don't want to presume. Yes, there's samosas. Yes, there's one Indian person in the entire room. I didn't want to just assume, because that's racist.
Yeah, yep. Well.
But yes. And then I said, did you make them, or did your mother make them? Because her mother's been visiting for a couple months and apparently filling the freezer with food.
Oh.
And she said, my mother. I said, okay.
Yeah, we could just have them come to Iowa instead of for the caucus. We could just have them go to every small town, their little summer festivals, whatever it is, and in my town it's Coal Miners Day, and just do the main competition that they're having for that festival, whether it's the Demolition Derby or Grease Pig or there's all kinds of other ones. And whoever wins the most gets the presidency. How about that?
No. I want
cow chip tossing.
Gong show would be good. The other is
frying
I'm just
pad
imagining
throwing,
a
frying
debate
pad
with where they're all sitting in dunk tanks.
Hmm.
I like this too. So you just each city and county fair.
Yeah.
Whatever their claim to fame
I
competition
mean,
is.
The thing is that there's I mean I've
are there
I've,
counties that don't have fairs?
I think so. Yeah, I think there might be.
To be fair, in Iowa, there's counties that have like 5 people in them.
Yeah, 99 counties. But
and no wait.
The thing is,
I was gonna make a Jay-Z reference, people, but I can't cope with that.
The thing is, there's competitions that I'm not remembering, but that you have probably never heard of. I mean, a lot of it involves throwing things.
Yes, toilets, cow chips,
cow chips, frying pans, rolling pins,
little people.
Hatchets.
Oh, jeez.
You know, horseshoes, of course.
Yeah,
we could have them play
a
horseshoe tournament, but that's not so. And you've got a pulling, like tractor pulls, garden tractor, like lawnmower tractor pulls. Mm-hmm. You've got, I don't know. There's just.
I'm going to regret asking this, but. So explain to me why this is a good way to determine the presidency.
It's every bit as good as the way we do it.
There we go.
As we do it now.
There we go.
And it would be more fun.
Well played.
I know some of these might seem ridiculous and boring to people, but actually they're pretty entertaining to watch. It's the grease pig thing especially. Or mud volleyball. That's kind of something that got popular more recently in small towns. Mm. And mud dragging, like you
dress up in opposite sex clothing and hang out in the mud.
Yeah, that no,
dude,
not that.
That would be awesome.
No, it's like okay, you. So, I actually was hired to be the MC for one of these things, which was totally the wrong. I don't why someone did this to me. I don't know, and I was horrible at it. But anyway, the idea is you've got your souped up truck, and you drive it as fast as you can and as far as you can, hopefully to get through the other side through a big mud bog.
Mm.
And if you make it,
yeah, I think
good.
I've seen.
And if you don't,
it's like
you get
a drag
stuck.
Race, but in the mud.
In
yeah.
the mud, yeah. So yeah, just lots of stuff we do out here in Iowa. Not cow tipping, though.
What if
that's
we,
a myth?
What if we restarted the American Gladiators show?
Mm.
I feel like that could be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is that. I mean, I think you've hit it on the head. We don't look for the competition that will most prove presidential candidates. We want the competition that's going to be the most entertaining.
Well, exactly.
I mean, because what the hell, really?
If now, as far as most suitable candidate, we could do the same thing, except have them do it in other countries, like, you know. Like they could go to Scandinavia and to those places.
Scandinavian cow chips.
Well, I don't know if this is a stereotype or if this really happens because it happens in Scandinavian United States. In the United States, you'll have these big lumberjack competitions
oh, yeah.
where they're tossing logs in their house.
Oh, yeah.
So if they're Scandinavian countries that actually have that also, it's not just something.
Oh,
we
we'll
do.
Just send them to Highland Games.
Whatever.
Caber toss.
And you know, have them go to other countries, and if they represent the United States well there, they can be president.
I may have hit on a piece of genius here.
Again?
I know.
This is like a daily thing for you.
I don't have a specific competition, but I've thought of a new way of thinking about this. But if we come up with a competition that is inherently very humbling and even humiliating.
Well, all the ones I just named kind of are.
I mean, hardcore.
Okay.
Like, really.
Like, to win, you really have to have no pride.
Participating. Or even participating. No. Yeah, you just have to be, like, yeah. Like, just off the top of my head, I'm sure it's a naked something.
Okay.
Like, just to start with there.
Okay.
Because somebody has to be willing to humiliate themselves to that degree in order to win the presidency. Because, let's be honest, one of the prevailing factors in anyone who makes it to presidential candidate level is intense sense of self-worth and narcissism and inflated ego.
Right. While at the same time they prostitute themselves to special interests and all that stuff.
Yes, so we should make it something that is much more obviously debasing. Because I feel like we're going to... I mean, something that much more demonstrates this is a civil servant position.
Like mud wrestling or...
Worse.
Jello wrestling or... Worse than those?
I'm unwilling to articulate the kinds of competitions.
Okay. Like a pie eating contest?
Or? Way worse.
Hot dog eating contest?
You can't think of it. I promise you that. Your brain is too nice and naive and sheltered.
Well, give me an idea then. Or are you afraid it's really going to scar me even for you to suggest it?
I don't know. Something that involves nudity, mud, and anal penetration of some sort.
Nah, come on.
On national television.
You're just trying to be.
No, I'm telling you. You got to be something way out there. Somebody has to want to lead so much that they're willing to go through. That's the thing. People talk, oh, it's so hard doing a campaign. And in a certain light, it is. But no, I want to see what you're willing to suffer through if you want to be president. What are you really willing to sacrifice? Because if you're not willing to sacrifice for the country, then I don't want you to leave. I mean, we could go a different, less sexual route.
Well, that's like, what I mean. Why is it got to be sexual to be humiliating?
So kill off your whole family. You know, if you can successfully do that, you get to be a presidential candidate. But we have to verify beforehand that you actually love your family. See, it gets complicated then. But some shit like that. You know? Something, a tremendous sacrifice.
Okay.
Maybe. No, that wouldn't work. I was going to come up with financial humiliation, but I'm like, no, because then very quickly people would pay you for doing that, and it would get all crazy. But yeah, if you could do a weird thing where, like, they had to be, like, a bum or a beggar for some time and could have no possessions other than their begging bowl and, you know, the scraps of clothing on them.
Like, spend a particular period of time homeless, like, really homeless.
Yes. And we'd be watching them, filming them the whole time.
That one's actually a little bit interesting.
Because
everyone
and then
is
at the end, anal penetration.
Because a lot of people have tried that homeless thing, you know, and it's always an eye-opening experience for them. And if they're articulate enough to describe it to other people, it's eye-opening to them too.
Gwyneth Paltrow tried to live for a week on welfare amount of money to buy food, and she died in the fifth day. That was from The Onion. And it was on a site that I like to go to called literallyunbelievable.org, which is just a site showing people who got fooled into thinking The Onion was real.
Oh, no. So someone was really sad that
they were like,
was
oh my
dead.
God, she died. Well, that was the whole thing, too, because she shopped like Gwyneth Paltrow, so she had, like, $80 for the week, and she bought all this, like, organic produce and things, and so basically had a meal and a half out of it. Yeah. Day five, she died. All right, that's it for now.
Yeah.
If you'd like to write the hat, then
and talk about the present. What is going on with the...
I don't know. This is a very political episode.
Which is fine. I mean, we've had them before, but usually we avoid current events so that the things aren't dated and the shows aren't dated.
But unfortunately, the U.S. presidency is here to stay.
Well, but there are a lot of things going on right now that are truly horrible that we don't talk about, not because we're insensitive to these things going on, but because we want the show to be a different kind of thing.
Yes. So right in the hat with good stuff. The magical talking hat at gmail.com.
We're not
good
complaining. Stuff. We're not complaining.
I'm always complaining. Like us on Facebook. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and talk with people there.
Tell us how wrong we are about everything
Tell
we said.
Us how wrong we are about everything. And tune in next week and see if I am still sick of your face.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.